It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score. And now, the Wednesday special edition of Crunch Time with Steve Tannen and USA Today's George Schroeder. Brought to you by Bi-Mart, just right for the Northwest. It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
Well, alrighty then. You know, just before we signed on, as we welcome you to Crunch Time and Sports Talk here on 95.3 The Score, it's a Wednesday, I realize that we are 73 hours away from a referee with his hand in the air giving the signal to whoever I'd assume lost the toss, and there's going to be a kickoff.
Huzzah!
And it's going to be Miami and Florida. I mean, I know the Canes aren't what they were. Gators are top 10. But it's the Hurricanes and the Gators, the start of college football season.
Pretty
73
good.
Hours.
It's pretty good.
So we'll talk with George Schroeder in a little bit, 7-8 minutes from now. I was reading the article about one of the former NBA players who said that Carmelo Anthony is being blackballed. And it's like, well, why? It doesn't make sense. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, it's not like a fan base would, you know, and even though we know which side I stand on, I mean, with Kaepernick, it's like the owners of the teams were afraid if they brought him in, there would be backlash and they would lose money. If a team rolled the dice on Anthony, it's not like there would be protests like they're having in Hong Kong now. He can't shoot. I'll tell you what, if you have a basketball team and you have Carmelo Anthony on your team and he can't shoot, you shouldn't have Carmelo Anthony on your team. The last 2 years he played, he was bottom four and bottom five in open three-point shoot. He's open and he can't hit one of three. He's not going to be your lockdown defender. He's not going to be your high screen and roll guy. He's not going to be the one to, you know, get your other scorers the ball in proper scoring position. He's half dimensional. He's not even one dimensional anymore.
Whoa. I mean, on a literal physical scale.
That's not possible.
I don't think half a dimension is possible. Like, what is one dimensional?
Well,
a piece of
it's
paper,
him.
A drawing.
It's a one dimensional player who can't do half of that dimension anymore.
The drawings.
I just made it up, but it's for the emphasis of my point.
See, entering it, does that make him the best player in a new dimension because he is the only player in that dimension? He has to be number one at something.
Sign Melo! I worked it out! Figured it out!
So in honor of that, I listed my top five all-time chuckers on Twitter, which you can visit at SportsTalk953. And by the way, for the record, if I say a guy's a chucker, that's not necessarily a put-down. Iverson is a total chucker, one of my all-time favorite players. Westbrook, chucker, love that guy. World be free. Pete Maravich, he gets across half court, he may shoot, one never knows. Antoine Walker, they asked him, why do you shoot so many threes? He says, because there aren't any fours. That's a chucker. I love that guy. And of course, the Costanza from the Keith Hernandez episode in the locker room. All you do is dribble. Kramer's complaining, I had at least 3 inches on that guy. And Costanza goes, all you do is dribble. Why don't you pass it? Because if I pass it to you, you'll shoot. You're a chucker. I'm not a chucker. Never chuck. No chuck. Kramer, oh, you're a chucker. Oh, my God. I didn't realize. Why didn't you tell me this before? It's not that easy to bring up. And then they get into it where Costanza is talking with Keith Hernandez. You know what I never understood? 162 games, 30 teams. How come there's never been a plane crash that wiped out an entire franchise? Looking at him, and Hernandez points his thumb at him and says to Jerry, who is this chucker anyway? This is what I've been thinking about the last 20 minutes. It's been a very productive half hour.
Did you at all, did you rewatch those scenes, or were those straight from memory? You're not even reading notes, just like line for line every single episode of Seinfeld ever.
That episode.
If something were to happen where the Beatles, like, you know, how in.
Yes, I could do that. I could create, if all of a sudden we were in the future and somebody Googled Seinfeld and it comes up with like a lawyer in Manhattan or something and the show never existed, I think I can get close. I could write a bunch of episodes.
So would you write them and essentially be like Larry David, where you're the writer, the producer, the behind the scenes
person? I think I could play Jerry.
So you would not only just like, I'm writing the episodes, I'm going to be Jerry Seinfeld. That's what you would do.
I think I could do that.
My goodness. That's kind of a slightly more fun version of like Yesterday, where a guy like lands in a coma and wakes up in an alternate universe.
You know, all of a sudden a guy wakes up and certain movies weren't made, and he all of a sudden realizes, well, I'll Google Casablanca. That's never been made. The Godfather's never been made. I got a good premise here. And by the way, if you know Hollywood at all, in essence, if you just sell the script, you know, they'll give you a couple $100,000. You could do that, and they could screw the whole movie up. It gets no skin off your butt.
You would be making the first, what's the deal? And people would actually be falling over laughing.
Yep, and you'd have to keep it a secret and hope nobody ever finds out. But with the Seinfeld episode I'm referring to, it's also a classic. You got the Keith Hernandez angle. You've got the JFK where Newman breaks in June 14th, 1987. He starts going through the whole thing. And Costanza trying to get the extra 26 weeks of unemployment benefits. That's an hour-long episode rolled all into one. By the way, somebody texted and said, how come Steph Curry's not on my all-time chucker list? This is just my favorite chuckers. He's not one of my favorite chuckers. He makes a lot of them. He's annoying. So there's no wrong answer to this list. Though Jay Romney tweeted back at me, I said, who's your favorite chuckers? He listed Chuck Finley, Chuck Knoll, Ground Chuck, the longtime Ram and Seahawk coach, and Chuck Norris. And I'm not really sure who the fourth one is, but that was pretty clever. But all that aside, we'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We'll get to the Ducks in a little bit, all the injuries at wide receiver, matinees, MLB, pennant chase, NFL notes, Duck schedules. Right now, though, it's Wednesday. We're counting it on down. We are 73 hours until Miami and Florida kick it off in Orlando. He's the fine columnist for USA Today. Catches work in the red section of the paper online. It is usatoday.com. On Twitter, the handle is @GeorgeSchroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you today, sir?
I'm good. What do you have against the 9 a.m. Pacific kickoff Villanova at Colgate on CBS Sports Network and the noon Pacific Stanford Youngstown State on ESPN? What do you have against those games?
Honestly, I only had the top 25 games listed, so I didn't incorporate the entirety of football on. I take it all back. I stand corrected.
Well, it's two FCS level games, so we would never probably watch them any other week. But Villanova at Colgate at 9 a.m. and Samford Youngstown State at noon, before Florida Miami, before Arizona at Hawaii, might as well go for it.
All right, no, and especially someone who lived 2 years in Philly and who has been on the Villanova campus, so I'm all in, George.
Well, I have to be honest with you, I'm not sure I knew Villanova had a football program, but here we go.
Well, remember, they had one. Howie Long went there, then they closed the program down for many years, decades even, and then they brought it back. So you might have fallen in a gray area there.
That could be.
All right, so something we've discussed, and a story a lot of people are following. You know, you had Baker Mayfield win a Heisman, Kyler Murray won a Heisman, and logic indicated the next quarterback would be Jalen Hurts, who transferred to Oklahoma from Bama. But Lincoln Riley insisted there was a competition with Tanner Mordecai. So do you think there was really much doubt? And I guess, what did Riley have to say about the decision to name Hurts his guy?
Well, he said it was that Jalen Hurts finished slightly ahead in the competition. He emphasized slightly and a little bit and things like that, those kinds of phrases and terms. And I don't know if that's true or not. How would we really know? But, look, I know even on this radio station, I've been saying when Jalen Hurts is named the starter, not if, but when, because it felt like a pretty much a foregone conclusion if you know, all else being equal, if everybody stayed healthy. And I don't know that anybody in the world was shocked, unless maybe Tanner Mordecai or the freshman Spencer Rattler, who was also trying to compete for the job. So I don't know if it was slightly or not. Let me just say this. It might well have been. But this time a year ago, we heard something similar after a guy named Kyler Murray edged out a guy named Austin Kendall for the job to replace Baker Mayfield. And if that's the case, we quickly figured out that there was a pretty big, you know, pretty big gap between those two guys. And that's no slight to Kendall. It's just that's how good Kyler Murray ended up being.
That's for sure.
Kendall, by the way, Austin Kendall named the West Virginia starter this week.
Wow. I mean, you want to talk about an overabundance of talent. So if you look at the numbers the last 2 years, Murray hit 70%. Mayfield was like 69 and change. Hurts has been more about 60, 61. And I read what you were talking about as far as he fits the system. I mean, has Lincoln Riley said that they'll make some tweaks to operate around his strengths, or is he going to have to change to fit into their system?
Well, Lincoln Riley's not really said either way, right? But I do think this. I think it's pretty apparent that they will have to that Jalen probably is a better passer now than he was. I think this is true, than he was when he lost the job at Alabama. But this particular offense is much more pass-heavy in terms. It's not that they don't run the ball, but they require much more of a passer than the offense that he ran when he was the starter. Alabama's offense last year, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about 2016 and 2017,
right,
versus the Oklahoma offense. There's no comparison, Alabama in 2016-17 versus Oklahoma. So I do think it's possible that Jalen Hurts has gotten better. In fact, people have told me he's a better passer now than he was when he lost the job at Alabama. But I also think Lincoln Riley, whether he admits it or not, is going to have to morph the offense to fit him, because the idea that he's going to slice and dice defenses the way the last two quarterbacks at Oklahoma have done is hard for me to believe.
Well, they've got an interesting schedule. They open against Houston week 3 at UCLA, and I actually want to get to the Bruins because you wrote about Chip Kelly, who had the awful start as a Duck coach, the Boise State game, and his start at UCLA, lost the first 5 games. But I like the whole gist of the article. Safe to say, like his time in Eugene, Kelly's not going to really alter his way and doesn't really care what we or any outsiders think.
No, he's going to do it his way. It'll either work or it won't, but it's going to be his way and not the way that you think it should be or I think it should be or anybody else thinks it should be. And Chip will, you know, either succeed, which is what I suspect, or he'll sink or somewhere in between, but it'll be done his way.
Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today, and certainly the chipster in college walked into two different situations. Oregon was really good. The circumstances at UCLA, be it talent, recruiting, and as opposed to, I guess, his win-the-day mentality. So in putting your piece together, what's kind of his approach with this program, which, like I said, way different from what he took over here off 3 straight losing seasons?
Right. No, that's right. And that's the thing, too. So first of all, he found a roster that was depleted, didn't have the same amount of talent either among the sort of the guys that were on the roster as he had when he took over at Oregon. And so you have that. So they played a ton of youngsters last year. They played 21 true freshmen, which was a UCLA record. they're going to have 42 freshmen this year on the roster, which is an amazing number when you consider, you know, that the scholarship limit is 85, right? So basically half your roster. And the other piece of it is, even if you walked into a full roster that was stocked with talent, there's a culture change that every coach wants to make. And Chip being Chip, his is maybe more dramatic and radical than from one conventional coach to the next, if there's that kind of transition. He didn't have to make that change really too much at Oregon because he'd been there 2 years. Or if he wanted to make changes, he understood sort of what the program was like and what the players were like. He'd already been there. So if he wanted to make changes, and I don't think he made radical changes, but he did made some, you know, some tweaks and maybe, I guess, some fairly significant tweaks that first year. He already knew where he wanted to do it. But UCLA was all new to him, and he was all new to the UCLA players. And I think that factoring in with everything else, including the youth on the roster, made it a lot more difficult deal than walking into the Oregon job or getting promoted to the Oregon job from already having been there.
I want to get back to the Pac-12 and USC, but I have a general question because I heard a guy on the SEC Network, Cole Kublick, he explained why Clemson is a prohibitive number one, despite the fact their entire defensive line got drafted, 3 in the first round, 1 in the fourth. They lost 2 all-ACC offensive linemen. I think it was Trayvon Mullen, a corner, was a second-round pick. He said they crushed Alabama, and that resonates. And that's one of the, he said that's a big reason that they were such an overwhelming number one. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. Now, you got to have some people coming back. And what you didn't mention is what they have coming back on offense.
Right.
They have perhaps the best quarterback in the country, maybe the Heisman favorite. And look, I'm not forgetting Tua Tagovailoa, right? He was terrific.
Sure.
But Trevor Lawrence was fantastic, and by the end of the year, seemed like maybe the best player in college football. Then you have Travis Etienne, who's one of the top 5 running backs in the country. You've got a good offensive line. You've got a fleet of receivers led by Justin Ross, who by the end of the year looked like the best receiver on the field, never mind all those talented guys at Alabama. So you've got a bunch of good players on the offensive side of the ball. And defensively, they are going to take a little bit of a hit. There's no question. But they have recruited really, really well, and they feel like they've got talent to fill in on the defensive line to where they're going to be pretty good there again. Now, I'll say this. I think they're going to have some growing pains there. I do think that that's true that they've recruited talent. But it isn't – when it comes to those 4 defensive linemen that they lost from that great defensive line, it's not just the talent they have to replace. It's the leadership. There was some chemistry with those guys that we don't usually see that leaves a big void on that team too. But I think they're good enough to just run the table or run the score up on a bunch of people and run the table for a long way.
A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder of USA Today. We've talked about it. Clay Helton needs a big year. He's gone. That was their first losing season since 2000. They've got their quarterback situation. Looks good. You wrote about them last week, and he fired T. Martin as his offensive coordinator. So some people, this might need some clarification. He hired a new guy who left, and now he's leaning on a new face, another Mike Leach guy. I mean, what's up with the offensive coordinator in Troy?
Well, let me just say this. When Cliff Kingsbury took the job and they were going to do the air raid, and then got the Arizona Cardinals head coaching job, and so obviously you leave when you get that opportunity. There was some question as to, all right, is Clay Helton really committed to the air raid? And the answer is yes, because he went out and got sort of the next guy on his list, who's Graham Harrell, who's another former Texas Tech quarterback under Mike Leach, who was at North Texas working with another sort of Mike Leach disciple, the head coach of Seth Luttrell, and had run a really nice offense, and frankly, to be honest with you, had run something that utilizes the run a little bit more than maybe Cliff Kingsbury has, and it might make a little more sense for USC. It's probably a little bit closer. Now, obviously, it was the group of 5 level, but it was a little bit closer to kind of what an Oklahoma has done with Lincoln Riley, where they run a very physical style out of that air raid, and then they still throw the ball all over the yard, which is what I think the model should be for USC. If you're going to use the air raid. So Graham Harrell gets the call, and you know, we'll see what he can do. I mean, you're right. They've got to win big, and you know, if they win big, it'll probably be because the offense is going good. JT Daniels obviously named the starter this week, yesterday, I guess. That's no surprise. I think he's got every chance to thrive as a sophomore. He was stuck in there too early last year. The air raid will make him look really good, and they've got skill position players. Here's the deal. If they don't have a great offensive line, the air raid will sort of be a nice equalizer. And if they can sort of survive this year, then theoretically the air raid, with the kind of talent that USC can recruit, could really push the Trojans back towards the top in a hurry.
I know this is pure speculation, but and maybe it's not an exact number. Maybe it's how everybody feels and the progress they're being made. I mean, safe to say 6 wins, 7 wins or less, he's gone. But does 9 or 8 actually get the job done? What do you feel has to happen progress-wise for him to be the coach again in 2020?
I don't know if there's a number, but you're right. I mean, 7 or fewer probably. I don't know that 8 gets it done. I don't know that 9 gets it done. It kind of depends on who the wins are against and who the losses are against and what the losses look and feel like. But, I mean, I think you probably need to win 10 to really start to feel safe. You need to compete with Notre Dame and with the better teams on your schedule. You probably need to win a bunch of those games, quite frankly. But this is a much more complex scenario than just win or else. I mean, it is that. But who's going to make the decision? Because there are a lot of people that don't know if Lynn Swann, the athletic director, will still be the athletic director by the time that kind of decision would be made. But I'll say this, if USC, you know, gets off to a rough start, and I don't think they will looking at their schedule, but if they get off to a rough start, then the watch begins and you could see them make a change, during the season. So there's a ton of pressure on them. There's no question. It's just that I just think everything's up in the air when it comes to Heritage Hall and the Trojans.
Yeah, they've got a fun 5 weeks. I mean, they have Stanford, Utah, at Washington all the first month. So we'll find out pretty quickly. Folks, he's George Schroeder, USA Today, usatoday.com, at George Schroeder on Twitter. George, always my pleasure. And, of course, when we talk next week, we will have games to review and preview. So we'll look forward to that.
Man, I cannot wait. We are so close to the big Villanova Colgate tilt that you've been pointing towards for so many months.
About time, George. Appreciate the time, as always. Have a great one.
All right, take care.
All right, George Schroeder, USA Today. Before we break, we've got this, you know, we always talk about the sweet deal. How about the super sweet deal? For $50, you can get a certificate for 10 tickets to the remaining M's home games. And, you know, we are really down to it. I mean, they are in a pennant chase. There's 6 more games at PK Park. So for $50, you can go to 953thescore.com, click on the sweet deal of the week, and bring the entire family, go to one game, a multi-game homestand, spread it out a little bit, and you can even use the sweet deal tickets for some pretty cool stuff. But anyway, check it out. Go to 953thescore.com and check out our sweet deals. And look for the Eugene Emeralds Flex Pass. All right, break time. Come back. We'll have an update and more Crunch Time. 953 The Score.
I'll take Bama and Clemson playing in the national championship game. Where are you on it?
Give me the field.
Whoa!
Give me the field. Really? Because I think the Georgia Bulldogs are equally as talented as Alabama coming into this season, right? I don't think that there's a doubt about that. In fact, even in the SEC, I think LSU is a legit college football contender. You look at Oklahoma, they've got a revamped defense right now. So I think there's enough contenders outside that I will go ahead and take the field.
And that guy's from the SEC Network. On ESPN with Trey Wingo. His name is Peter Burns. You think it's become predictable when you... I mean, it's college football. He said you got Clemson and Alabama playing for the title or the field. The guy went with one of the other 128 teams, and the reaction was like, whoa, what are you, nuts? This would have been like over that period where, let's be honest, barring injury, after they played the first time, we were pretty sure we were getting Warriors Cavs, right, for the next 3 years. It's just like, it was unbelievable. All right, welcome back to Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score. If you want in, 284-8571. Again, to clarify, a couple of you have texted. When I listed my top five favorite chuckers, it's favorites. Again, if you want to go by shooting percentages. And another thing, Michael in his heyday, chucker. Kobe, chucker.
Oh, I remember figuring out that Michael Jordan was a chucker because we tried to figure out something very similar came up. Maybe like an Allen Iverson thing had happened and you were like, oh, that guy would just shoot like crazy. And I was like, well, who else put up like a ton of shots like per minute played or something like that? And, you know, Jordan was at the right. Jordan's like, you know, the all time leader in shot attempts and in minutes played. And it's just like, yeah, he took a shot like every 10 seconds if he could.
Yep. Never saw a shot he didn't like. Of course, other people see shots they would always like, but it's more like tequila or bourbon. Did you guys hear the saga of Larry Bird? So there is an artist, a California-based street artist, Jules Muck. That's made up, right? So there was a very famous Sports Illustrated cover with Larry Legend, the college basketball preview issue, 77-78, actually the year before he took the Sycamores of Indiana State to the national finals against one Irvin Magic Johnson. And this person drew a mural on the side of like a housing development, and it's Bird with his old blonde bushy hair with the I don't know. It's not royal blue, more of a powder blue Indiana uniform. But she tattooed him all up. And Bird, apparently, a little on the angry side. Here's the article by Pete Blackburn of CBS Sports. Larry Bird still very much cares about his image. And there's a mural in Indianapolis, so obviously his home state. It says it's sullying his good image with inaccurate tattoos. And so it's in Fountain Square. This means nothing to me and probably most of you. So he's got a cardinal on his face, a spider web on his shoulder, and two rabbits doing the deed. On a forearm, there's a number, there's an Indiana on his left. I don't want to call it, yeah, I guess it is the forearm. And by the way, he enlisted his lawyer to get the artist to remove the tattoos. Here's the take. Larry's position is he's elevated himself from where he began to where he is now through a lot of hard work. He's developed a brand that is marketable and needs to protect that brand. The mural as originally painted was a departure from that brand. Now, the artist says she didn't mean to offend, just add a unique twist to the iconic cover to make it a bit of her own. She wasn't trying to make a prestigious, fancy piece, but just have a little fun and make people laugh at the oddity. She is going to, in fact, remove them all at Bird's behest, except for the one that says Indiana on his forearm. Now, we know, and I could go back to my generation when not everybody was tatted up. And, you know, like if most of the parents of my friends, if somebody would have come home with some of the ink that is very common today. And, you know, we've learned that if you judge somebody because they have tattoos or a piercing, you're an idiot and a pea brain. But it's kind of an interesting story. I mean, it's obviously him, so he does have a right to, I guess, have an input. But I'm a little off put by the artist agreeing to it. It's like, no, it's my art. So, and do you think at age 62 that people are going to start thinking, I can't believe I rooted for the Celtics all those years. Bird has a tattoo of rabbits having sex on his forearm.
Like, well, that's just ridiculous enough that you can't actually remember Bird playing and you wouldn't think that, like, yeah, you know, a gigantic script Indiana on his arm.
Probably would have stuck out.
Right, you think you would have remembered
that. And a shamrock in honor of the Celtics.
Yeah, true. But where is this mural again?
It's in Indianapolis. So it's in a major city. Yeah. Apparently, since they mentioned where it was, I would imagine those from the area or the region is probably familiar. I mean, you know, if we were doing a show in Indianapolis and we talked about, you know, Kesey Square, they would have no idea what we were talking about. Everybody here does. So for us to be expected to understand where Indianapolis's Fountain Square is, it's strange. And, you know, the people who are off put by stuff like this generally concern me. It's like the one of those commercials where I think it's an insurance commercial where the couple is sitting around and one woman says to the other, she looks at, oh, you have a tattoo, so I guess you don't work. It's just, you know, the small-mindedness of all of it. It concerns me when a writer or an artist alters their work over an outcry. I mean, sometimes a retraction is necessary because you get a fact wrong. I mean, it's not a photograph of Larry Bird. It's an artist's depiction.
Right.
And again, I could see maybe the rabbit tattoo be like, come on, man. That's first of all, where'd you even get that from? I mean, it would be different if she painted him with like some, I don't know, what would be considered an offensive tattoo? You know, she didn't put a swastika on him or anything horrific like that. So it's just, well, I'll tell you what, it was sure a unique story. I don't remember ever seeing one like that.
Yeah, it's weird that you would do a Larry Bird painting in his home state and you wouldn't do some, like, big iconic moment, or you wouldn't, you know, take a moment that he had in a Celtics jersey and just be like, no, he's from Indiana. This moment happened in his Indiana State jersey now, and I'm just going to change the colors. But you did, like, a weird cartoon, like, 2019 version of Larry Bird that's, you know, coming through the AAU circuit or whatever, and he's just like, this is what 2019 Larry Bird would look like.
Whoa, I didn't even think of that.
I mean, that's kind of what it is, but, like, why would you do that with a street mural where you're trying to honor somebody? Like, it seems more of like a cartoon parody thing that you'd want to do, like, online in a sketch or something like that. Like, oh, what would 2019 Larry Bird look like? Or, you know, these NBA stars, if they grew up in, you know, a completely different era, and like, here's the random tattoos that they would have, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I'm trying to think. Michael, no. Larry, no. Magic, no. Kareem, no. I'm just trying to think of, you know, the 80s and 90s. Obviously, Rodman came along. Was Rodman the first real kind of high-profile, super-duper star NBA player that was just inked up all over the place? Because now everybody is. It's become so commonplace. I mean, I remember when you saw Rodman, it was like, whoa, I've never seen anyone with that many tattoos. And now, I mean, who's the dude, the Birdman, Chris Anderson, played for Denver? I mean, that is, it's like, dude, when do you sleep? Do you just have a guy who you just pops by and is just like, well, I need another one. Well, that, you missed my right toe. I mean, he's just totally covered. I'm just trying to think of LeBron's all tatted up. Lillard's all tatted up. And does anybody out there even give that a much less a second thought, a first thought? And why would you? It's like you said, it's 2019. If that's bothering you now, Are you Rip Van Winkle? Have you been asleep for 20 years?
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't really bother me. Like, whatever. Like, do your own thing with tattoos. Like, I've always, like, I'm so paranoid about, like, oh my gosh, this is going to be the wrong thing. What could it be if I put the
wrong
thing
on it? I'm just
scared
to death.
It's going
to
be there forever.
A needle's involved. I'm out.
Yeah, like, I'm not afraid of needles, but I've heard it hurts a lot. What if I pick the place that one guy says, like, oh, it's not going to hurt if you get a tattoo there, but then another person's like, no, that's the worst place to get a tattoo. Why would you ever put it there? Like, all of that, like, absolutely, like, scares me. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. What does any of this mean?
But if I ever decided to delve in, which is never going to happen because, like I said, I'm a scaredy cat and it's just not me. I mean, between my daughter and her husband, they must have 40 between them.
Man. Yeah, like that's the other thing is with soccer players in Europe and well, also in the MLS too. It's always super interesting when a guy does like his medical test. And Bayern Munich have done this with their new signing Philippe Coutinho, who they signed a couple weeks ago. But they've posted like 10 or 15 photos of him, like you know, doing a thumbs up with a big smile during his medical test. And the dude's just got like you know, he's tatted up. He's got like a really nicely well done photo of like I think his child on his arm. He's got these birds and like a crown thing. There's something on his hand, and then he's just got like a Mickey Mouse on his side. I'm just like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I could see somebody from my generation maybe deciding, wow, because if you have kids that were born in the 80s, it wasn't really the thing to do. But now it's like, I've noticed how life-changing the grandkids are. So you get their name or some kind of symbol for right. that. I mean, I could actually see that happen, and that would make sense.
Yeah, and, like,
and again, for me, no, a needle's involved. I just run.
And like, I'm not trying to like judge people or whatever. Like, do whatever you want to do with your body and your tattoos and stuff. But it always gets me. It's like all of these things seem like they're very important. And then Mickey Mouse. Like... Like at that point, I'm like, I get everything else and everything else has to have meaning. But why that Mickey Mouse tattoo in that spot with that era of
the
Mickey Mouse?
Right.
Yeah, like on his side. I'm like, there's a story behind that. Like, that's very interesting. What are you going for?
You could also say, hey, what kind of Mickey Mouse tattoo is that? All right.
Degrading and funny.
Yep. Before we move along, I would like to welcome a new sponsor into the show, the folks at SeatGeek. You'll be hearing us talk them up in the immediate future. And it was really cool. We talked with one of their representatives, and it was very easy to do and talk about because I've used it. The last time I've been out of state. I mean, obviously, when I'm here, I get a press pass. But when we went to Yankee Stadium, it's a ticket search engine, and one of the things I love about it, A, simplicity. You log on, and real quickly, you get an idea of what it's going to cost you, and you could set the parameters. You could decide whether you want to go to a concert, whether you want to go to a ball game, whether it's college or pro or anything it is. You could decide, I really want to see this. I'm willing to spend between X and X. You set the parameters. You hit search, and it's like you'll get a good idea if you can get in, where you can sit, whether you can get great seats, good seats. And it's got all the events. I am not saying this. And, you know, you're talking about reviews from users, from people like you and I. I mean, they must have 50,000 reviews and 5-star reviews, a lot of customer satisfaction. I mean, it literally just pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web. It rates deals. And the best part about it, not the best, one of the great aspects of it, you get an interactive seat map. So it's not a matter of, well, I know that stadium, I know that arena. It's like, no, I'm going to be sitting right there. And, you know, get the SeatGeek app on your phone. It's fast, it's easy. And like I said, last time I was at Yankee Stadium, I got 10 tickets, kind of like, so we want to go to Wednesday's game. I bought them about a week out, and it was basically, got it. And we were set to go, and 10 of us got to see our beloved Yankees. So it's a beautiful thing. 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yes, sir.
But the most important part is that when you download the SeatGeek app on your phone, you can get $10 off by using our promo code. Again, $10 off with the promo code THESCORE, all one word, THESCORE, for $10 off your first purchase. Promo code THESCORE, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Use the app, download tickets, buy tickets right on your phone. It's very simple and easy and good, like Steve said.
And I was counting on you. See, I went the first eight innings. You came in and closed the deal.
Loser.
Lock it down, baby.
All rise, all respect thy bell. Welcome to the Crunch Exchange. It's how we wrap up Wednesdays here on Crunch Time with Steve Tannen. I'm Nick Rogers. Hi, everybody. Let's jump right in. Why not? Mike Trout, we have talked about the Millville Meteor a lot this week. He continued to be a demigod at baseball. He leads the AL in home runs by 7, as well as being tied with Cody Bellinger as the leader MLB in home runs with 42. He's going to hit 50 for the first time in his career, I think. And there is a major peloton of players that are looking to hit that half-century mark. And aside from the question I'm going to ask, Trout is leading the AL in war by 2.2 over Alex Bregman. That same 2.2 war difference is the difference between 3rd and 15th best players in the American League, the difference between Bregman and Nelson Cruz. That's just insanity. Back to the dingers. In the history of baseball, there have been plenty of players to hit 50 or more in a season, but never more than 4. In 1998, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., and Greg Vaughn all hit 50. In 2001's, Bonds, Sosa, Luis Gonzalez, and A-Rod all hit 50. Plenty of times were a season where there was one player that hit 50, or a pair, a couple of quartets, never a trio of 50 home run hitters in one season. I looked that up. I thought you would find that interesting. This year, Trout and Bellinger are probably for sure going to hit 50. They're only 8 away. Christian Yelich is probably going to get there with 41. And Pete, don't call me Peter Alonso, is at an even 40, not only chasing 50, but the rookie home run record. Ronald Acuna and Jorge Soler both have 35, with just over a month remaining. Getting to 50 for them would be kind of a stretch. The prospectus, at least 4 players hit 50 home runs this season.
So you got Bellinger, Yelich, and Alonso, and Trout.
Right.
Yeah, I would love to be able to actually invest in that, so buy it. I'd like to win a home run count. Title for sure. 1974 wiffle ball. I think I led our league in homers. That's it. I've been chasing my next one since.
Just time travel. You go back 150 years. You want to try out for baseball and then just, you know, start the home run revolution.
There now. You go. Beat you, babe.
Speaking of Christian Yelich, he is chasing more history. Last season's MVP has had 36 homers and 22 stolen bases. This year, he has surpassed both totals with 41 homers and 24 stolen bases. Stolen base total is good enough for 8th in baseball. He's getting close to reaching an elite never before done in the 150 years of baseball, reaching the 50 homer, 30 stolen base club. You see, with the juice ball and players looking to score 360 feet at a time, working station to station is coming to an abrupt end, not unlike the bunt, the hit and run, and the dodo bird. Like I said, Yelich, 24 stolen bases through 112 games. That's once about every 5. The Brewers have 36 games remaining. Yelich would need to play in all of them to hit that 30 mark, but averages are averages, and this late in the season, there's enough sample size to think that it might just work, and if he keeps up his pace, Yelich would end the season with 31 stolen bags. So the prospectus, Christian Yelich will create and enter his very own 50-30 club.
Yeah, we had A-Rod and Canseco 40-40. Nobody's 50-50'd. And once it's that close, you get a sense there'll be a point in the season where it'll be like, you need 2 more stolen bases. So I'm going to buy that as well.
It's been a while since we've seen Shohei Ohtani pitch. The young Japanese superstar has been rehabbing from Tommy John surgery, while at the same time hitting .301 with 16 homers, 54 RBIs, and 11 stolen bags in 89 games this year. The Angels haven't been able to trot out Ohtani to the mound since September 2nd of last year, which is when the team thought he had an arm injury that might require Tommy John surgery, and then he eventually had the Tommy John surgery. It's hard to remember what kind of pitcher the now 24-year-old was last time we got to see him, because it's been almost a year. And jumping from the Japanese Professional League to the majors and posting a 3.31 ERA with an even 11 strikeout per nine is damn good. But with recency bias, the success that Ohtani's had as just a hitter, Angel fans are starting to see the pros of just having Ohtani hit, which seems crazy seeing how desperate the Angels could use a guy with a 3 ERA on their staff. But remember, Ohtani's trying to be a legit two-way player, which is something we haven't seen since Babe Ruth, so there is plenty of precedence on making sure that a player focuses on one position. The prospectus, the LA Angels of Anaheim that play in Orange County should make Shohei Ohtani a full-time hitter.
Woof. That's one of those things where I think you need to let the doctors in on it, because you don't want to do damage to the point where you don't have any of him. But so I would have to do a consultation, aka pending.
Ted, my boy, it's gonna be legend. Wait for it.
Sticking with LA, the LA Clipper Chargers of Carson are in a bad spot. Just when things were looking like they were going to start to turn up Chargers, they went full San Diego Chargers. There were signs of things happening when the Chargers were a 12-win wild card team, which had never been seen before. They drafted stud linebacker defensive back Derwin James. He revolutionized the defense. Phillip Rivers was playing younger and better than ever before. He has his stud wide receiver, great second options to work with, a halfway decent offensive line, and now he's losing his top running back. It was reported today that talks between the Chargers and Melvin Gordon have not gone as planned. Gordon is working out on his own in Florida and isn't happy with whatever contract he's been offered at this point, and it's looking more and more likely that his holdout will last into the regular season. Good news for anybody who in fantasy drafted Austin Eckler, and even better news for anybody who's yet to have their fantasy draft. Gordon had previously said that he would take a trade if a deal couldn't be reached, but at this point it's looking like Le'Veon Bell 2, Electric Boogaloo. The prospectus, Melvin Gordon, holds out for the entirety of 2019.
He's 26 years old. He's really going to, and they have a chance to, like, be a Super Bowl contender.
Yep.
They got, you know, they were in the neighborhood last year, 50 catch guy. It doesn't make sense. And he had some injuries last year and missed some time. We can't do this again. Somebody's got to learn a lesson. Sell that. He's got to. This is insane. This is criminally insane. All right, that brings us to break time. Looking ahead to the other side, we'll be back with Sports Talk. I've got like 8 things I want to talk to you guys about. Many of them coming up next. 95.3 The Score.
I got a lot of problems with you people.